Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Only Love Can Break Your Heart by Ed Tarkington. Read by Peter Burkrot. How accidentally a fate is made, or how accidental it all may seem when it is inescapable. Philip Roth. Part 1. Don't Tell a Soul. 1. Paul was my half-brother, but I never called him that. This was partially out of loyalty, for I remained devoted to him despite everything, but mostly because it didn't seem quite enough, having only half of one brother. So I never thought of him that way. We lived just inside the city limits of Spencerville, on Old Boone's Ferry Road, a long tree-shrouded drive through the wide grassy fields and the horse farms on the gentle slope leading out to the Blue Ridge Mountains. The old man's house was a two-story brick Georgian set up on a rise at the end of a long gravel driveway. No colonial manse, mind you. More like the impression of one in the mind of a poor man made good. There were four bedrooms on the upstairs floor of our house. My room was across the hall from Paul's, facing the side yard. Before I came along, it was used by the old man and Paul's mother, and later by the old man alone in the years between one wife and the next. Whether he ever had any other women up there in his bed, I do not know, but I'm highly doubtful. Around the turn of the 1970s, in Spencerville, sleeping over could still do damage to reputations. Even the free and consenting adults of our town were made to feel that it was somehow more unseemly to enjoy each other in the comfort of their own homes than to be caught in the back seats of parked cars, or the end of a deserted cul-de-sac, or for said cars to be seen parked outside the Marquis de Lafayette Motel, across the river in Monroe. If the old man's car was ever among those spotted in one of those areas designated for clandestine carnal athletics, he certainly didn't drive it there with his much younger, much prettier second wife sitting next to him. My dear mother, bless her pious, proper soul, refused even to sleep in the same room the old man had shared with that other woman, the first Mrs. Richard Askew, Paul's mother. I learned this fact not from Paul, but rather from the old man himself. He had a terrible habit of launching into incontinent monologues in front of his elementary school-age son, the way he might in speaking to some random stranger passing a boozy hour or two on a layover at an airport bar. Inevitably, he'd catch himself and remember whom he was talking to. "If you ever tell your mother," he would say, to which I would nod solemnly, proud as I was to be considered worthy of keeping his secrets. My mother was young enough to be the old man's daughter, hence he sometimes spoiled her as if she were. To spare her from having to sleep in his ex-wife's bedroom, the old man had a large addition built behind his study, with a vaulted ceiling and a great stone fireplace. The Royal Chamber, Paul called it. Though he'd been offered any room on the second floor, Paul kept the one he'd always had. It was the smallest of the four rooms, but it had the best light, a kind of fishbowl effect that made it feel somehow separate from the rest of the house. From as early as I could remember, I would join him there whenever he would let me. Together we would stretch across the width of his bed, gazing out his windows across the yard to a broad grassy knoll in the distance, atop which sat the old white-columned estate house, known as Twin Oaks. Twin Oaks had been vacant for many years. The house stood in a clearing on the horizon, under the two southern red oak trees for which it was named. The two trees must have been considerably smaller when the house was built, but by the time we came along, they were both giants, 100 feet tall, as thick at the base of their trunks as the columns of an ancient temple built to honor an exalted god. "It's haunted, you know," Paul told me. He was 16 then.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?